You're tuned to 90.7 KRWG Las Cruces. We were listening to Michelle Schumann playing music of John Cage. This month marks the 100th anniversary of the birth of John Cage, one of the most important and continues to be considered avant-garde composers of the 20th century. It's my pleasure to welcome Michelle Schumann into the studios of KRWG. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you. And tonight, Michelle Schumann will be performing the Sonatas and Interludes for Prepared Piano by John Cage. Tell us about this extraordinary sequence of pieces. There are many, many short little sonatas. We just heard two. Mm-hmm. It's about 60 or 70 minutes worth of music. And John Cage wrote about this work that he wanted to express the permanent emotions of East Indian traditions, the heroic, erotic, wondrous, mirthful, sorrow, fear, anger, the odious, and their common tendency toward tranquility. Tell us your thoughts about this amazing work, and then I want to talk also about what it means to prepare a piano.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Cage was very much interested in Eastern religion and really trying to find, at first, this idea of music being able to portray the senses, and then the idea that all senses do go to tranquility, do go to a sense of serenity, do go to a sense of sort of openness. And his idea was that the only way to have divine inspiration was to quiet the mind. So in a way, making music kind of all go to that point. And it's interesting that he wanted to portray all these things, all these emotions through the music, because it actually transformed how he felt about emotion and music altogether. Because what he actually found was when he was trying to portray a specific emotion, oftentimes audiences felt something totally different. So if he was trying to portray sadness, people would laugh. And I think in his music, this really irritated him at first. But then he sort of gave way to the realization that that experience with music was a personal experience for everyone. And it made him open up to the idea that that music could be portrayed to mean anything. And he kind of gave up that idea that a composer had to dictate what that meant. And I think that happens in prepared piano music too, because a very similar thing happened with him when he started preparing pianos. He was preparing pianos, and I can tell you more about that later, too. But the first time another pianist invited him over to their apartment to show them their rendition of a piece of music by his, he went over to the house, and he heard this piano being prepared and these pieces being performed in a certain way that were completely different than how he had first prepared his own piano. And that's normal because all pianos kind of sound different and will have different sonorities kind of come out of them, different jingles and jangles that they're capable of. And again, at first, John Cage was really kind of dismayed by this because it didn't sound anything the way he wanted it to sound. But then as he kind of gave way to this idea that there could be that aleatoric sense, the idea that by giving a set of instructions that 10 different pianists on 10 different pianos would produce something different, it gave way to this idea that sound could be produced in any sort of way, and to not be kind of handcuffed to the idea of what your concept is. And I think all of that informs who John Cage is and where his music went after that.
Tell us what it means to prepare a piano.
All right. Well, John Cage first prepared a piano kind of early on in his days. He was very big into percussion music and had percussion ensembles. He played percussion himself. He was interested in discovering new instruments for percussion, and he played a lot for dancers. I think it was when he was at the Cornish School in Seattle that he was commissioned to write a new dance. And I think this was the piece Bacchanal. And the interesting thing was that they wanted him to write a kind of African dance, but they didn't have much room for him to bring his percussion troupe along. So all they had for him was a piano. So he first started, he had studied with Arnold Schoenberg for a period of time, so he was a little bit interested in 12-tone music. So he was trying to find a 12-tone kind of African theme. and he fell very short on trying to discover that. And again, all he had was a piano. So he decided to kind of experiment. And I think the first thing he did was put a pie plate, a tin pie plate on the piano to kind of hear that sound.
On the strings.
On the strings.
Inside the
yes,
piano.
So on the strings on the inside of the piano. But then, of course, he realized very soon that the pie plate was going to jangle in and out and it was going to bounce out of the piano. So it was then that he discovered that if he put screws or bolts, threaded screws, in between the strings of the piano, that they could produce a completely different timbre out of the piano, but also remain stationary. For those of you who don't know, most notes on the piano have three strings. So you're able to put items in between strings 1 and 2 or strings 2 and 3. And depending on where you put them on the piano, further up the string or further closer to the dampers, they produce a different sound at all times. So John Cage started putting all sorts of materials. We have screws, sometimes screws with bolts, sometimes screws with nuts on them, so they create a jangly sound. Pennies are a great thing to put in between the strings. He uses bamboo. He uses weather stripping, which is a felt, to kind of dampen the sound. He uses rubber. And all this can be placed into the piano. Now, for those of you listeners who are horrified right now, I assure you that none of this hurts the piano. You can prepare a piano in a way that is totally safe for the piano, but kind of completely transforms the sonority of the piano. And that's one thing that I love about the prepared piano, is that the piano is a really iconic instrument. We know what to expect when we see a concert pianist walk out onto the stage onto a 9-foot piano. We know what that sound is going to be like. And then to have it come out to be something completely different, I think, is a very exciting thing. So we transform the piano basically into a 10-finger percussion band.
Well, and many people may not realize that the piano as we know it, not in its earlier iterations as harpsichord, but later, after they stopped plucking the strings early on and made the hammers on a piano, it is technically a percussion instrument.
Right.
So he's expanding the actual innate qualities of the piano as a percussion instrument.
Well, and even the early pianoforte, they had different sort of stops in them too. So, because, you know, during Mozart's time, they were interested in this sort of Janissary band kind of sound coming out of the pianoforte. So there would totally be bells on the piano or these little effects that you could use to kind of bring something out. And then that definitely went by the wayside. But then John Cage, he discovered something completely different and very exciting, I think.
I'm speaking with Michelle Schumann. She'll be performing the sonatas and interludes for prepared piano tonight at the Atkinson Recital Hall at 7:30. How did you get interested in the music of John Cage?
It was in my undergraduate years. I was in a new music ensemble, and the new music ensemble director was a composer. And he knew of John Cage, and he was very interested in exploring a work like this. So we did a piece called Mysterious Adventure. And it was an interesting situation because he took all the responsibility of setting up the kit, of putting together all the materials, of actually preparing the piano. And then I just had to come in and play it. And it was very interesting for me, especially as an undergraduate, to learn a piece of music on regular piano and then play it on a completely changed piano. But it was just a very exciting thing to do, and to again have that sort of shock of something new coming out of something very old. And at the actual performance, the audience just went crazy. They were so excited by it. It was so much fun for them and so enjoyable that I really thought that there was really something to this and something worth exploring further. And then I actually didn't explore it further until I was in my doctorate. And then I decided to do a lecture recital full of many, many different works for prepared piano by John Cage. Not the sonatas and interludes at that time, but all of his individual works, of which he has many. And it was just, I really enjoy that exploration. I liked the experimentation of finding those different sounds on the piano and discovering different things. And also finding out that this music, even though sometimes it can be intimidating for listeners, it can be exquisitely beautiful. And finding, you know, and being able to, you know, take the chops that I'd learned as a classical pianist, you know, learning what I learned about playing legato, playing beautiful, playing with a beautiful tone, playing with beautiful phrasing, and actually applying that to this music, I think has been very meaningful to me and to the music itself.
And you've been doing these Happy Birthday, Mr. Cage concerts since 2000.
Yes, I had my 12th year of doing it this year, and of course it's the 100th centennial, and I've been doing them in Austin for 12 years, Austin, Texas, which is where I'm from. And this year we did a five-hour marathon of John Cage's works. It was kind of hoot. It was amazing.
Well, I was reading that many of your concerts are not just concerts but events, and that you often talk to the audience and explain what's going on. And I was interested that you also had collaborated with a film collage artist, Luke Savisky, in a rendering of these sonatas and interludes, I assume, in some sort of video and music collaboration.
Right. He's a wonderful Austin artist who, actually, it wasn't video, which is interesting because most film artists now use video, but he would actually do loops with live film. So very interesting, and he was very spontaneous with the loops that he would use, and did a lot of collaging and a lot of overlapping to kind of emulate the sounds that he was hearing, but it was all done live, which was a really incredible experience. The only thing that's difficult about a situation like that is he had 8 projectors set up, and that can be kind of loud. And this music's actually very delicate at times, too. The piano loses its entire volume, not entire volume, it loses the grandeur of its normal volume when you dampen it with these materials, but still has a very special quality to it.
And also, you've also produced this some of Cage's music at the Austin Zen Center and at the Brooklyn Zen Center. So given his interest in Eastern religion, I'm interested how that played itself out.
Well, it was wonderful to explore the works that particular year, his most meditative works. And Cage himself was a Zen Buddhist, and again, really felt that the purpose of music was to quiet the mind and to allow for divine intervention. And he has several pieces of music, and even within the sonatas and interludes, there are several of those sonatas that are incredibly peaceful and really transformational in a way, take you to a different place. And it was wonderful to do this, to do the concert in kind of a sangha where people actually were sitting. You know, if they could sit in chairs or they could sit on their, I don't know what they're called.
Little meditation stools.
Exactly. And really take that in a different way. And it was a remarkable way of experiencing that music, because I think, again, the music is meant to transport you to a different place, to open up a different kind of psyche in your brain to allow you to experience that.
Tonight, Michelle Schumann will be playing music of John Cage at the Atkinson Recital Hall. I have to say, having the name Schumann must have just predestined you for a piano career.
Yeah, I was born with a silver piano in my mouth. When it's your name, you don't think about it so much, but my parents were great lovers of music. They encouraged me greatly. My family's from Germany, so in a way, I had some of that heritage in me to kind of get me through as well. You're going to ask me if I'm actually related. I can see it on your face. There's no evidence that there's any relationship, but honestly, it wouldn't forebode well for me anyway, because all of his sons either died young or were opium addicts or had serious mental illness, so trying to steer clear of that. I like to say that I was maybe the offspring of the love children of Clara and Brahms. So,
yes, Clara Schumann. I was thinking of both her and Robert as spiritual ancestors in any case. Michelle, you also are the artistic director of the Austin Chamber Music Center and very involved with a lot and have performed, as you mentioned, with dance, operas, and I noticed this wonderful Long Beach opera production of Orpheus and Eurydice on a swimming pool, magnificent little piece of the video that I saw. But
yeah, I love collaborations of all sorts, but that was a really interesting collaboration. We were in an Olympic-sized swimming pool area, and of course, musicians were not in the swimming pool, but the opera actually occurred in there. And it's a small...
On boats.
On boats, yes. Also, the singer and it's a small setting. It's really for soprano and clarinet are the main actors. And they never got in the water. Did they get in the water? They did not get in the water, ever. But there were dancers, and there were people who were sort of swaying where the boats would go, and they were in the water. And it was really breathtaking, and there was a lot of wonderful special effects with kind of fog and different colors, and it was an incredible experience. It was also an incredibly bizarre experience playing in an acoustic like that, and to have the string quartet and piano off to one end and have the clarinetist be far away, but in a pool area where like there's just a boomy kind of sound going. It was kind of amazing.
Yes, it gives a new meaning to the word wet acoustics, right?
Absolutely.
having it at a swimming pool. Well, this has been a pleasure to talk about John Cage and various of your activities. Tell me just briefly what's next on your plate. I assume you do these John Cage concerts mainly in September, or do you do them the year?
They're always in September. This year
his birthday was September 5th.
September 5th, that's correct. So, but this year is a bit of a special year because it's 100th anniversary. So I do have, I'm performing quite a bit throughout the year at different venues of people who are also celebrating his 100th. So it's an exciting year for John Cage, certainly. And I always have many collaborations on the horizon. I actually have a piece that's being written for me by a composer, Graham Reynolds. For any of those who have seen the new movie, Bernie, he wrote the music for that, and really wonderful Austin composer. And we're going to be experimenting with writing for the piano, but also having some inputs on the piano with microphone to create different sounds coming out of the piano, too. So it'll be a very exciting thing to put together.
Thank you so much, Michelle Schumann. My guest today on Intermezzo on KRWG 90.7, performing tonight at 7:30, Happy Birthday, Mr. Cage, all the sonatas and interludes for prepared piano. It's great to have you on the air.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.